Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Paranexus Universe. It is February 21st, right? Nope, 19th. I'm 2 days off.
You're already into the weekend, huh?
Yeah, I'm thinking of the 21st. I got the 21st on my mind because of Brendan Budd, Sacred Circle on Saturday. So we were just talking about that. Anyway, welcome to Paranexus Universe. Welcome, Grant. Welcome those in our chat room.
Yeah, welcome, everybody. It's nice to have you with us again tonight.
Yes, it is. We are going to have a show. Tonight's show is going to last from about 30 minutes to an hour. We had a little bit of a snafu with our guest tonight. Apparently a mix-up in communications. So we're going to talk about a different topic, and we're going to invite Patrick Burke back another time. We had him on the show last August. Yeah, so
yeah, Pat's a real good authority on Civil War ghosts, and we're sorry that we missed him, and He's a busy fellow, so we understand. And
it was partly my fault because I've been just a smidgen under the weather and haven't been as perfectly perfect as I normally am. Grant, do you believe that?
Oh, of course, though. Of
sure.
Course, yeah. We'll let you slide this weekend, but if it happens again, I'm calling security, and your desk better be cleaned out real quick.
You're gonna fire me? Really?
I'm just calling. I'll let security handle that. We'll do it the corporate way. We'll let security handle you.
All right. So tonight we're going to talk about a topic that we've kicked around quite a bit, and it has to do with paranormal teasers, so to speak, and it's also related to the question of what constitutes proof of paranormal activity. And so we're going to discuss that, have just a bit of an open discussion, and we would love to invite anybody in on this discussion in our chat room, or if you want to call, the number's there on your screen, 347-945-7799. You can also push the click-to-talk button if you have a headset on your computer, and we'd love to get your input as well. So to begin with, Grant, you had sent me an article on water on Mars.
Oh, yeah, a real interesting article. I'm trying to remember where I picked it up at, where I read it at. I think it was on, might have been on physics.org. But what was so interesting about it was they have a photograph of what appears to be a water droplet on one of the landing legs of the Phoenix lander. And they seem to think that the water may be because of the high level of salts, the percolates that they found in the soil contents may keep water soluble at colder temperatures. And I think the article specified didn't dug that with those percolates in the water combined, water could stay fluid up to 70 degrees below zero.
I think that's what the article said.
That's pretty wild.
I'm going to put the link in the chat room for the article that you sent, and it discusses it and shows that picture of the droplets which grow. Did you mention that one?
Yeah, no, I didn't. You know, they grew it with the rise and the fall in temperature, correct?
I think so. Yeah. So I mean, it's an interesting photograph, and it does certainly look like droplets on there. You know, but I guess it's kind of this whole water and life on Mars thing, I think, is kind of sneaking up on us a little bit here. It's like they keep talking about it. And
yeah, we keep getting closer and closer to the precipice, and it's almost like we're waiting for this. I wouldn't say precipice. We're like on the verge of this incredible paradigm shift, because if we can find, or, you know, the conditions are right on Mars, and we all know that these microbes can live in really extreme environments, then the whole thing about us being superior, being the only thing in the universe, is all going to come down like a house of cards.
Yes. I mean, you take some of the other the moons, like Europa, Titan, even Pluto, you know, which is now being reclassified as a dwarf planet. You know, they with an atmosphere, by the way, it has an atmosphere of some thin atmosphere. You know, when you look at this whole thing, I think in a few years we're going to look back and say, holy mackerel, where doesn't life exist? It's like it can...
Yeah, it's
going to
be the old 50-cent word, ubiquitous. It's going to be everywhere. Yeah. And I mean, you know, I'm pushing 60 years old, but you know, if somebody would have told me when I was a boy of about 10 or 12 that we might find life on a moon of Jupiter or even Saturn, I would have laughed my head off. Mm-hmm. You know, we thought for sure it would have been Venus, and then that went down the tubes, and then even with Mars it didn't look very favorable. So, you know, the thing about it is that the universe is this strange and magnificent place where, you know, who knows? It's just, you know, going to be a marvelous place for us to expand out to in the future. Let's hope we can make it out there.
Yeah, and I think we will. And, of course, I was watching this documentary on Pluto today. I'd seen it before, but they've got the, what is the name of that probe? It's called Horizon?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, it's supposed to be there in 2015. Amazing, you know, it's covering 1,000,000 miles a day. And I think Pluto's, what, 2-4 billion miles away.
Something. Yeah, it's a long ways away. And, you know, it really gives people a wake-up call, because I think, you know, people are under the impression that, you know, after watching Star Trek and a lot of science fiction series, that, you know, it's going to be an easy jump to make, you know, to a time when we can, you know, have faster-than-light travel, or, you know, when you can instantaneously go places. And it's not that way, and we're a long ways away from it, you know, because you can only reach a certain velocity, even with the fastest. I think the fastest our planetary probes go is maybe 25,000 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Even at that speed, you look at Voyager, it took it 13 years, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing, just to digress for a second, Doug, I saw another article. There's a great website. It's called Space Daily. And it's, and I encourage all the folks, if they're interested in, you know, what's going on in space, to take a look at it, because they mentioned today, when you were talking about the moons, that NASA has recently decided that they're going to go look at Europa rather than look at the outer moons like Saturn, like Titan. So there's going to be a big focus, and I think folks are going to see it here within the next year to maybe a year and a half, where all of a sudden the focus is going to be to try to go to the moons of Jupiter more than the moons of Saturn. It's just pragmatic. You can't too far to go.
Mm-hmm.
And even Jupiter's a long ways to go.
Yeah, it is. And so that whole question of life and how ubiquitous it is, I can't talk either, how
that nasal congestion
prevalent it is. I mean, you go from, you know, the tube worms they discovered deep in the Gulf of Mexico, and I believe other places, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely.
To any environment on Earth has bacteria growing. It's like I was watching that... a documentary the other day on the San Andreas Fault, or excuse me, that's not what I'm talking about, the Mariana's Trench, that's the one I'm talking about, same thing, quite
enough,
yeah, right. Anyway, so, you know, they went down there, in what year was that, around 1960-ish, the two men?
In the Trieste.
Yeah, exactly right, and they saw a flounder-type fish down at the very bottom, you know, 7 miles deep. And so life is everywhere. And that gets us into our topic for tonight, which is life and its diversity. And we're gonna cover the teasers, you know, whether it's ghosts, spirits, aliens, UFOs. It's like we get just enough to tease us. You know, when we see sightings, all of that, just enough to tease us. And it's directly related to the question that Sharon West brought up, what do you consider proof of paranormal activity? And I was on another program a week or two ago, and she was listening. We mentioned that, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. We'd love to know, what do you consider that? We should open up, well, actually, Sharon asked that question in the chat room, or excuse me, in the forums on Paranexus. We might want to even post that. What do you consider proof of paranormal activity, and why is it that we only get teasers? That's one thing I've noticed, Grant, in the years that we've been doing investigations. It's like you get these little things that happen, and there's never enough to be objective. It's just you get all these things that go on, and you say, well, you know, we know it wasn't the person, or we know it wasn't natural phenomena, but what was it? Whether it's EVPs, funky pictures, and that's the thing with pictures. You know, I almost pretty much have just pretty much given up on pictures. It's like you get a funky photo that really looks good, but what can you say? You know, it's too easy to Photoshop things. It's like pictures are no longer proof of anything.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's almost where part of the whole excitement and the fun of being involved in this field is realizing that you're dealing with a phenomena that can be so brief and so subtle at times that you can overlook those subtleties. And even if you do capture a subtlety, it can be so dang inconclusive.
Yes. You know. And so we'd like to know what our listeners think, too. If you're in the chat room, you have a question you want to add to it, feel free to type it in, or you can call us at the number on your screen and get in on the discussion on paranormal teasers. Let's see if we can come up with some examples, some specific examples. It's like UFO sightings. Let's start with that. You know, when you look at the sightings that occur, so many of them obviously are at nighttime. There's a few during the day, but at nighttime you see the lights. Often the lights seem to move in tandem. In other words, they look like they're all part of a rigid structure. Other times the lights seem to move around like they're separate structures. And then there's the sightings. I've been reading some books by Jenny Randall, ufologist from Britain. And she's talking about, one of the books is Danger in the Sky. They're talking about these sightings from airline pilots. And you know, these airline pilots, not all the time, of course, it's rather rare, but there are some sightings from these airline pilots that obviously are something beyond a naturally occurring phenomena. And, you know, what are they doing there? In fact, part of the deal is that a lot of them are constituting near misses, which is a dangerous thing when you're in the air, especially near congested airports like London's Heathrow Airport.
Or O'Hare.
Oh, yeah. Or
incident O'Hare. Yeah. Or, you know, probably the most famous is the JAL incident that occurred over the Pacific. I can't recall what year. I think it was either in the late 80s or the 90s when they were actually tracked and followed by what appeared to be a huge mothership with other ships, you know, periodically, you know, kind of following up behind, and that was an incident that went on for quite a while and was also picked up on radar.
But when you watch some of these shows that demonstrate this, like the recent Stephenville, Texas sightings of about a year ago, and you see the video, and you see several videos, obviously something's there. The U.S. government obviously went after it. They sent up their fighters after it, which they at first denied. And you get that kind of a thing where you get a ton of people who see it. You know, even the Phoenix Lights is perhaps a possible example of this, although I'm not yet entirely convinced of that. But you still see all of this stuff going on. What do we make of it? Because it's like all these reports going, what are we to make of it? What's the deal? And I know that's the $64,000 question, but it's like if, in fact, there are alien spacecraft that are hovering and flying and doing, you know, circles around some of these airliners just, in flight.
Just interacting into our air strategic air command at will anytime they want, and that's pretty mind-boggling right there.
And so what's the point of it? You know, I mean, I'm looking for a rational thread through the whole thing. What's the point? That's my question. Why are they there? Then they disappear. They play around. It's like they're playing games. It's like teasers. It's the best word I can come up with it. They tease us. We get some pretty good stuff. The government, of course, covers it over, won't release it. The Freedom of Information requests, many of them come back, and they're all blacked out, the pertinent data.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things, Doug, and I know that I think that you're familiar with him, but Jacques Vallée, I think in several of his books, he started off as a scientist that was interested in the UFO phenomenon, and gradually came to the conclusion that he wasn't sure that the phenomenon was actually something extraterrestrial in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his books, I think it was Masters of Deception, talks about the very subject, the elusiveness of this phenomena, and the fact that it presents itself to humans in many different manifestations.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of thought, which I thought was very fascinating, was that maybe this is something that is that has co-inhabited our space or our planet with us forever, and is a part of us in some way, or is literally teasing us by giving us these projecting into our reality things that we interpret as UFOs,
mm-hmm.
which in itself is a fascinating concept, because if he's indeed right, then it spills over into paranormal.
It does. And I agree. It's like there's got to be some common denominator here for what's going on, for why so many credible people see things that cannot be explained, despite the skeptics, despite the debunkers. There are a few cases which simply cannot be explained. And that spills right over into ghosts, too. I mean, I've often, for a long time, and we've talked about this, I thought that there's some connection between ufology and parapsychology. I think there's more than one connection. You look at, let's just go to the ghost thing, for example. We speculate that ghosts exist in the spirit realm, right, on a different plane of existence, and yet there are indications that some UFOs and aliens also have access to that plane. Some of them, we've got evidence for time travel. We've got evidence for interdimensional beings. So if ghosts are not interdimensional beings, what are they? You know, that's what they are, by definition, if you ask me. And so take the whole ghost thing. We go in, you know, the client may report some pretty interesting things, and there have been some pretty interesting reports, apparitions, especially in some of these tourist places where people who really did not know anything about the history will report seeing the same individual, an apparition of the same individual. You know, what are we to make of that? And if they can appear to us, why don't they appear to us at other times? For example, on demand, why one night you can get activity and another night you can't? Who was I talking to recently? I think it was Mike Jones. He was talking about Ghost Hunters International, the episode I think that was on last night. I didn't catch it, but he was telling me about it. I tried to record it, but I missed it. They went to a place, wherever it was, that had a long history of deaths and many, many, many deaths, and they couldn't get any kind of activity whatsoever. They went to another place that really had no history, and they got activity. It's like there's no rhyme or reason to it. That's what is puzzling about the whole thing.
Well, you know, one of the things you and I have kicked around, and Mike and I, and when we've had our sometimes group discussions about, one of the things that I find really fascinating about the phenomena is I'm kind of inclined to wonder if there's if it's a combination of different fields, how these fields interact, how these energies interact, and what the byproduct is of those interactions. Before we went on air tonight, I was talking to Mike, and perhaps he was referring to that episode of Ghost Hunters International, but he talked about them using an infrared and ultra low frequency light band to do investigations, and that the results on the ultra, I'm trying to think of the ultraviolet level were pretty remarkable. And, you know, which led me to wonder, what if we have some sort of residual energy in a place and it's triggered by interaction with either the environment, temperature, or perhaps, you know, could even key it to the stone tape theory, and for some reason that energy is either triggered residually, or in some cases we know that with EVPs it may even be intelligent. So it really is such a mind-boggling combination of things.
It is. And Jen brings up a question in the chat room. Why aren't some of these noted parapsychologists who have passed trying to make contact? See, what puzzles me is, you know, in ghost investigations, allegedly, you know, gosh, there's all kinds of ghosts trying to make contact, moving things, making bumps in the night, yada, yada. Why aren't we getting any kind of really good contacts made, especially now, when we've got a number of people who have done this, they've passed, where are they? Why are they not coming back and saying, hey, this is who I am, you know, I'm over here, this is what it's like. It's like, where's the rhyme and the reason? Where's the common thread? Why do we seem to get only spirits who are earthbound because they have, you know, ton of issues, they have unfinished business, whatever the case may be, so they remain behind, they don't, quote, cross over, and then we could say, all right, well, you know, maybe the people who don't have issues, they cross over, well, then we hear stories of them coming back on visits, right? They've crossed over, but they can come back, and they'll come back from time to time and serve as a guardian angel, or we've had reports of them coming back and warning a family member or something. And so, you know, why is it that some can, others can't? I mean, what greater proof would there be if one of the late deceased parapsychologists or paranormal...
Somebody from the British Psychic Society?
Yeah, whoever.
Because there are certainly plenty of people who did investigations in the 1800s. And, you know, and you know, that's one thing that I find really fascinating about this, the whole science of the whole study of the paranormal field, is that many of the guys that did it in the 1800s came to the same conclusions that a lot of us in the field come to, that it is so elusive, it's something that's so intangible, so hard to get any really solid data on, and yet at the same time you walk away thinking, wow, it's so odd that there's something that's got to be happening, and is it something that's uniquely human and tied in with our perception of reality? Is it that other people have a total different perception of reality, and maybe, you know, they in the particular frame of mind that they're in, that these things become visible to them? It leads to more questions than answers.
Well, it's like the game keeps changing. The rules of the game keep changing. It's like all of the things we think don't always make sense. They don't always fit. You know, like the earthbound versus crossed over thing.
It's almost like a trickster sort of thing.
It is. It's like I'll tell you what, if I didn't know any better, I would say that the sole purpose of ghost sightings, alien sightings, and UFO sightings is there to do nothing other than confuse us and keep us guessing.
Or to tantalize.
The same thing, you know, it's like,
yep.
It's like that's the common thread, because among all of them, we can never get anything concrete. They give us just enough to keep us confused, and then they change the rules. You know, it's like
kind of like our government sometimes, you mean?
Yeah. Undoubtedly. Can't get a grip on it because the rules change. There's the whole thing about when there's a lot of electromagnetic energy in the air, well, ghosts can manifest easier. Okay, let's give them all the electromagnetic energy they want, and we may not see anything. There are those who say that ghosts are around us all the time. We just don't pick up on them if we're not psychic, so to speak. Okay, well, I'm still trying to figure out where are they. If a person without any history of paranormal activity moves into a house and all of a sudden stuff starts going on and then they move and it follows them, what happened that? You know, who's causing that? Now, I personally believe that, and this is not news to you, but I personally believe that the vast majority of ghostly paranormal activity is caused by a human agent. I've come to that belief, you know, psychological reasons. I think that there are some cases where there does seem to be an entity involved, but most of them seem to be generated by the people. Most of them.
You know, certainly in those cases, it really makes you wonder how much the mind of those individuals is interacting with the environment as well, because, you know, what if it is something where it's different kind of fields? And we all know that our minds, like I think that probably one of the best illustrations of the energy that the human individual, you know, generates was that TAPS episode that Kevin Costa demonstrated at the Paranexus convention.
And with the
with Jason and the psychic, and Jason was somewhat resistive to letting the psychic greet him, and you could actually see the auras. I think it was on
the thermal
imager. That was really interesting stuff. So we're radiating energy, and how does that energy interact with all? I mean, we're just bombarded with all kinds of particles slamming in here. Some we can see, some we can't see. Some that are penetrating us are coming in all over the place like rain. And we're not aware of them because we're just like fish in this atmosphere of oxygen, hydrogen, and nitrogen. I mean, oxygen and nitrogen.
Yeah.
What else is it?
And other stuff, a few other things.
Right, yeah.
But that that example, in my mind, would demonstrate how we connect with each other on a psychic level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what else are you going to make of it? So we're talking proof of paranormal activity. In that arena, what are we to make of that?
Mm-hmm.
I think that that was true. I think what they showed was true. And it obviously, people can connect psychically and do. I mean, we all know that. How many times do we have to pick up the phone at the right time and we know who's on it, or we think of somebody and they call, that kind of a thing? You know, that can't just be explained away as coincidental. Not all of it.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. And it's really interesting stuff because, you know, and you and I have kicked this around many times, Doug, one of the things that I find so fascinating about it is the fact that, you know, we can't seem to put our finger on it. But I also have this suspicion that some of it may be projection that we have, that human beings, and I know this is nothing new, that we human beings do have certain abilities mm-hmm. that we're simply not aware of. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I think would be, what if we have psychokinetic abilities and we're simply not aware of it? And when things happen in a house that a person, whether they just moved in or maybe they have those abilities and they're nothing more, what we've interpreted as ghosts are manifestations of that energy
mm-hmm.
that we are unconsciously creating. Perhaps it's stress. So the link is, it's not necessarily paranormal. It may be completely natural, but a combination of a person's, what's going on with that person, not only internally but externally. Are they experiencing stress? Are they experiencing poor physical health? And how are all of that, you know, how is all of that kind of spilling over and mixing into their environment, and how does it manifest itself? If it does at all.
Yes. I agree. So when it comes to psychokinetic energy, see, in my mind, if we look at the data, you know, that's parapsychology, the study of that psi phenomena. If we look at the data, in my mind, I think that there's more than enough evidence to pretty much prove that human beings, some, not all, and maybe we're all capable of it, but that psychokinetic energy comes from humans, an agent, which can move things, create things, resemble entities, things of that nature. See, in my mind, that's pretty much a given. The circumstantial evidence, the anecdotal evidence, has pretty much proved that to me, and that's why I believe that most of these cases can be explained with that. Can they all be explained? No, but many of them can.
Well, you know, too, Doug, I always think, you know, you and I have kicked this around for years now, and, you know, it always makes me think of, you know, when I went on my first investigation, not knowing what to expect, I was a little bit apprehensive, you know, because you're kind of indoctrinated by TV and some of the things that you've heard, and so going on a first investigation, you know, it was a little bit of anxiety. But as time has gone by and we've done investigations, you know, none of that is there anymore. It's almost like, you know, show me. And I know you're the same. Mm-hmm. You and I are on the same page in this, because we'll go there and give me a reason. I've never walked into a place where I felt extremely uncomfortable, or the vibes have been so heavy that, you know, it's been foreboding. You know, and I mean, if I walk into that situation, you know, that's going to get your attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't either, and you know, I don't know what to make of that either. It's like, you know, we say, well, we're not really psychic or anything, but we still get vibes. I mean, I guess I've been into places where I felt a negative vibe, a negative energy, but it was no biggie.
Mm-hmm.
Not even that wasn't even on an investigation. It was just in a shop. This one particular shop I was in, which in that past in time,
and, you know, like your comfort level may not be as high as it would be in certain situations, but then what you've got to take into consideration is what are the environmental factors? And I'll give you an example. I was over at Casadega, as I alluded to a couple of weeks ago, and we're over at the Casadega Hotel, which is a great place. We had a wonderful time. I love it dearly. But the way the hotel is built and the way the structure of the hotel and the way the decor of the hotel, it is very – it gives you a feeling of entrapment in the hallways.
Well, they're a bit narrow.
Yeah, they are narrow, and ceilings are very high, and it makes a person feel entrapped. And if you know anything a little bit about cinematography, one of the things that they do in the movies, if they want to make you feel really trapped, they'll have their people in the scenes in very narrow, confined field of vision.
Yes.
And it creates a field of tension and of confinement. And the only reason why I bring that up is when you're new to investigating in the field, and like anybody, as a novice, or if you're starting a group and you're going on an investigation, you don't want to do a good job, and you may be nervous because you don't know what to expect at times. But you've got to evolve and grow. And as you look at this phenomenon from a different perspective, you get a total different feel about how you should approach it.
Yes.
And how you go into an investigation. And some of your previous preconceived notions fall by the wayside. They have to.
Yeah. You know, I hear, it's so interesting because in this field, what you see on TV is not what you see in the field. What you
Absolutely
see on
not.
TV is hyped, it's dramatic. You know, we see these seemingly credible stories of people who've been attacked by ghosts And yet, in paranormal circles, that's so rare to hear of that. And the stories that I have heard where that's happened can be explained with RSPK or PK ability, psychokinesis. There's nothing in my experience hearing some of these stories that would not explain. And that seems so much more possible or likely, if we keep in mind Occam's razor, at least the simplest explanation is likely the correct one. Well, you know what? We know that the human mind is non-local, and we know it's powerful. That, to me, seems like the simplest explanation. But then there are those other situations that, it doesn't seem to fit. But nevertheless, those are rare. And, going into some of these cases, it's like, all right, let's rule out the psychology first. Let's get that out of the way. And I don't know that we've ever gotten that completely out of the way. Do you, on any of our investigations?
I think it's an integral part, and I think it's every good researcher has to look at it and kind of be willing to dissect it and see how it comes into play. Because it seems to be the rule instead of the exception.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And when I say we haven't ever gotten it out of the way, I mean we've never been able to rule out the psychological aspect to a case. Can you think of one? Am I missing something? I can't
think of one case that we've investigated that hasn't been a factor. Now, and I would say to anybody that's maybe perhaps you're just starting or you're thinking about forming a group, don't let what we're saying discourage you at all, because if nothing else, it's just as fascinating as if you had an apparition sitting right across from you. The case that comes to mind, Doug, is one, if you remember, we did about a year or two ago over in Fort Worth, Florida,
mm-hmm.
where we had a lady who was bright, intelligent. The lady was a banker, and, mm-hmm. She was hell-bent on having spirits in her house.
Mm-hmm. She wanted them. There was a part of her that needed that, and I can see that. We could see that, because when I tried to get her to take her power back, she wouldn't. She resisted it until I kind of got her angry, but she knew what I was doing. We've talked about that case before. But
the other interesting thing, though, Doug, was when we started talking to that person after the investigation, it wasn't like we hadn't done a preliminary, all of a sudden we start finding things out like, well, I haven't been sleeping well for the last 5 or 6 months. Well, just the sheer fact that you've had sleep deprivation can cause a number of things. And, you don't have to be graduate student in psychology. No, it's just human nature. If somebody doesn't sleep, they're not going to be at their best behavior, or if they've been ill. So there's a ton of different factors that can affect an investigation from a psychological standpoint.
And that's true. And if you compare what we have discovered with this, and you compare that to what's out in the field, and I'm talking about specifically the ghost hunting field, it's like, yes, there are all these spirits, there's all these apparitions, and I want to believe, I really do, but so far, boy, it's been a bit hard. The evidence all points to psychological factors and PK, psychokinesis on the part of a human agent that's creating this stuff. But
we're still waiting for that case that's going to knock our socks off.
Sure. We are, and
we're open-minded to it. We have not. I think that's the key, and that's what you're trying to pass on to our folks in our audience, is that despite this, and I think they know this intuitively, but despite what we're talking about, there's still the possibility is there. So you have to remain open-minded, and you have to be very eclectic in the way you think about approaching an investigation and how you conduct it.
Yes, you do. And even though the evidence seems to point to psychology and parapsychology, that is PK and psi phenomena, as causing the majority of these cases, doesn't mean that it can't be a genuine ghost thing. And we are open to that, because there are cases that don't seem to fit that scenario.
You know, and I think the more you do the investigations and the more you're willing to, the more intellectual tools you're willing to throw in your toolbox, like could it be fields? Could it be residual? Could it be a stone tape? The more tools you have in your toolbox, the more eclectic you are, the better equipped you are to approach your investigations.
Yes, and we've been saying that, and I want to touch on that again here in a few. We've got somebody on the line, so let's take our caller. Let me get to that. Come on, button, click. Hello, this is Doug. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, this is John from Texas.
Hey, John, how are you?
Hey, welcome to the show, John.
I was just wondering if I could share an experience with you and you could tell me what kind of paranormia this was.
Yeah.
Please do.
Okay, so there's one night I was just sitting there minding my own business, watching the TV, and it was around 3 o'clock a.m. in the morning. And I went to get up from my couch to go back to sleep because I was having a little trouble sleeping that night. And as I was leaving, I just heard a little boy or a little girl's voice say, "Don't leave us yet."
Interesting.
And then I looked to the top of the stairs, and it appeared that there was a figure up there. It was almost in the shape of two genitals and a penis.
Really?
Very good. What an interesting apparition. Do you see those frequently?
Yes.
Or are those just located in Texas?
And it actually made me quite aroused to where I shoved round things up my ass.
Okay.
Wow, that's fascinating. I hope everybody from Texas is listening.
Yes. You know, they say things are bigger in Texas. All right, John, thanks for calling in. Don't let the door...
Maybe he didn't really see alien. Maybe he saw some aliens and he was subjected to the infamous AP.
All right. We're done with
Thank
John.
You for your call, John.
Yeah. You got to take those. Okay. So back to the thing about being eclectic. That's one of the things that I highly recommend for paranormal investigators. And if you have been primarily researching ghosts and things of that nature, why not broaden the field to aliens, to UFOs, and things of that nature? Because there are some connections. One of the things we've discussed in the show before is that many abductees experience an increase in PK ability or PK events once these abductions occur. What are we to make of that? You know, what happens there? It's like one of the things that we've found out from our investigations that these folks who seem to have this paranormal activity, they seem to have a heightened psychic ability. They're psychically sensitive. We've seen that connection. So, and the same would seem to be true for abductees, and I'm not so sure the same is true for UFO sightings. I mean, I don't consider myself psychically sensitive per se, but I had a sighting of UFOs as well. So, anyway, interesting stuff. So if if you're only doing ghosts, and researching ghosts, then you should... look at broadening it. If you're only doing UFOs, think about broadening it into parapsychology as well, because it will help you to be a little bit more broad in what you're able to do. And that's one of the things that I think is important. You know, it's like paranormal researchers almost have a unique ability to do a better job at researching the paranormal than per se, just a straight mainstream scientist. I think that the nature of the things that we investigate broaden us to possibilities. I think it makes us more eclectic in our approach, in our mindset.
Absolutely, and that's the key, because you'll be a better researcher. You can't you can't interact with other groups unless you maintain that kind of approach to the whole field of paranormal investigation.
Yes. So, just to bring everybody up to speed, we are talking about the elusive nature of proof of paranormal activity, regardless of whether it's concerning ghosts or UFOs or whatever. And we're trying to find some common threads. We're trying to get past just the teaser part. So that's what we're talking about. We did have a guest lined up, Patrick Burke, who's been on our program before, and just through a miscommunication, things just didn't work out tonight. So we're going to try to invite him back another time. So we have opted to keep our show to about an hour tonight and talk about this topic. Teasers, paranormal teasers. It's like all they do is tease us. So what do we make of that? If anybody has any questions or thoughts on that, feel free to post them in the chat room or give us a call. Just try to keep it, you know, away from penises.
Yeah, you know, apparitions. Yeah, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so.
And soup cans.
Yeah, keep it away from that stuff. We're really trying to find some answers. So, what do we consider proof of paranormal activity? I think this is an interesting question that Sharon Weston posed months ago. And I've been looking at a number of things, and I've talked about this with you, Grant, and I know I've talked about this on the air, but you take the way that we find planets. You know, we don't see them directly, but we measure the wobble in the star, and we can calculate that there's a planet there. That is strong circumstantial evidence. Look at Mars, you know, the methane issue, where we think that there's life on Mars now, or some of these scientists do, because of the methane levels that are being replenished, which comes from living organisms, right? You know, have we seen life on Mars? No. Is there circumstantial evidence for it? Apparently so. So there's a lot of assumptions that are made in science. There's a lot of assumptions that are made and based on circumstantial evidence. So why can't we make some assumptions and some draw some conclusions in the paranormal field?
Well, you know, the other thing too, Doug, is, you know, if you start to adhere to quantum physics and you start, I mean, not adhere, but if you start looking into quantum physics, you know, then everything is really up for grabs. And you start talking about multi-dimensions and, you know, in a multi-dimension universe or a multiverse, who's to say that dimensions can't coexist sideways on top of each other? Who knows? And so, I mean, you know, it always reminds me of the movie, what was it, The Outsiders or whatever it was with
Nicole Kidman?
Right, and where one of the ghosts explains to her that, you know, our worlds just kind of overlap at times, and, you know, we kind of co-inhabit, and then we kind of fade out and fade back in, which is very interesting concept, because what happens if, let's just take for instance that we buy into the hypothesis that there are extra dimensional spaces. Well, how do we know that those spaces aren't indeed overlapping, and what happens when they interact? What kind of funky stuff goes on? Maybe they tease us just for a second and kind of withdraw. So maybe there's contact, you see something very subtle or very odd for only a few minutes, and then it bounces back. So everything is open. It's wide open.
Yep. Jan was just in the chat room and just commenting on that. She asked, what role do you think time plays in all those? Perhaps people pass over to different dimensions that move through time differently. Could be. We don't know, of course, but it could be. There's a lot of possibilities. And,
well, I think the concept of time is uniquely human.
Yeah, well, you know, or, I don't know, biological? You know, I mean,
possibly a combination of the two.
Sentient, biological?
One of the most interesting things that's happened, and I know that the folks that have experienced alien abductions, are one of the things that they've reported is when they question the aliens about time, the aliens are completely baffled by it. They can't conceive of it. And so to me, that says that that's something uniquely, that's our stamp. That's humanity's way of trying to anthropomorphize the universe that surrounds us.
And so is that, you know, which aliens is it? I mean, we've obviously dealing with different ones. You know, if they're interdimensional, yeah, you know, I can buy that. If they're not interdimensional, then why wouldn't they be subject to time?
Well, what if they're not biological? What if they're mechanical?
Well, that's...
And if they're mechanical, time means absolutely nothing to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we know, the a lot of times the Greys have been, many abductees have reported the Greys as being mechanical. They've manifested behaviors that at least humans, you know, interpret as mechanical.
Could be. So, you know, so far from this conversation, the one thing that I'm reasonably certain of is that the majority of these paranormal, these especially ghost-related types of things, can be attributed to PK psychokinesis on the part of human agents. I know that doesn't explain it all, but I know that explains probably the majority, if not all, of the cases we've done. I would love to see that case that you talk about that's going to knock our socks off here. I would love it. I would eat it up.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be a great research opportunity to see an apparition, to have things happen, to see something, you know, that can't be explained with PK. Unfortunately, most of it can. But, you know, I would love to have a ghost appear and say, you know, this is so-and-so. I used to be a paranormal researcher. I'm back here to tell you about this and that and the other thing, and here's the proof. You know, here's something I know that nobody really knows. Go check it out.
Yeah. Okay. What was Houdini's message to his wife, Roseanne? Believe. And she went for, what was it, 20 years to try to... Still there, Doug?
Yeah, I'm here.
And she went to seances for, what was it, 20 years after Houdini died?
Yeah.
And they never got the message. Some people said that, you know, that seances that had come through, but Houdini's wife said, nope, never got the message.
Yeah, so what's up with that? And yet I've heard accounts where the message did come through, where the person
mm-hmm.
came back and give mm-hmm. the message. So, again, you know, Jen had brought up earlier, what if they don't have any control over it? Well, that could be. Why is it appear that some do and some don't? Again, there's the teasers. It's like everything in the paranormal field is there to keep us guessing, to keep us confused, and that's one thing that just doesn't sit well with me. I don't like that. If there's a disorder in it, there's no order in it. There's no common denominator. That's what we're looking for here. So, you know, some interesting stuff, and the discussion needs to continue on this, and how can we start nailing certain things down? What evidence do we have among certain cases that will allow us to nail down a specific scenario, you know, regarding whatever the case may be?
Well, you know, one of the things we've talked about too, Doug, is one of our best ways to go about it is to collect EVPs.
Mm-hmm.
And what is truly the nature of EVP? Now, some folks may adhere to the theory that it's the voices of disembodied and that, you know, it's proof that something is trying to interact with us, either intelligently or they're just, you know, something that's constantly replaying. You know, it's like hit the replay on a video and a residual sort of thing. but it's – lost track of my thought there, Doug. Help me out.
Uh-huh. I'm way
close
past
to 9 o'clock.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm 50 now. I can't remember.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you crossed the threshold. Well, I'm sorry, folks. I kind of lost track of my thought. Must be having one of those senior moments.
Well, the point is that we need to keep nailing this down. We need to keep looking at this thing way beyond what we see on TV. My thought is, and this is my conundrum, I want to believe in all of this, and I probably do. My concern is that no matter what happens, especially in a ghost investigation, regardless of what happens, it could conceivably be explained with psychokinesis on the part of a human agent. For example, even a psychic, okay, we get a good psychic, they are able to make a connection with whoever, they get information that really nobody knows, and you have to go do a lot of research to find out and validate. And let's say we do. How do we know that that came from an entity versus the psychic's ability to dial into the cosmic library and find out? How can we differentiate between those two? You know, did they actually talk with a sentient entity that has passed on? Or did they somehow get into the universal mind and connect with the universal mind versus just remaining in their own? You know what I mean? I don't know. And that's what puzzles me. I'd like to know that. Because if they're dialing into the cosmic library, then that's going to explain how they were able to know that stuff. But on the other hand, did they connect with somebody? You know, I would like to think that they did. I would like to think that.
Yeah, and, you know, I think I remember what I was going to say. With the EVPs, you know, we really don't know what the nature of EVPs is. It could be something intelligent trying to communicate with us. But then again, how do we know that EVPs sometimes, because they come across as so odd in their intonation, and in the content, that how do we know that those somehow aren't radio signals, television signals that somehow got caught in vortexes in all the multi-fields there, and something in the environment just happens to trigger that?
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's something that's induced by humans, whether it's heat, whether it's atmospheric, who knows? There's a multitude of factors. But nonetheless, it's still very fascinating, and, you know, EVPs are one of the best tools that we have,
right,
to kind of keep the exploration up and to try to document, or because it is solid data. That's one thing we do have, although we can't really verify the nature of it yet, that it truly is voices of spirits. It may not be.
It might not be. I mean, that could be explained with PK as well.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, who knows? So, interesting stuff, and continue to research this and ask questions, try to get some answers, try to get through the elusive nature of paranormal activity, try to get through the teasers, try to bring some order to it. That's what I want to do. We've got to focus on that. What common denominators do we see among all of it? Where does the evidence seem to point? That's what we need to focus on.
And, you know, here at Paranexus Universe, you know, this is your forum. This is your forum, you know. We want this to be the forum where we can discuss these things. And, you know, you guys out there, don't be shy. You know, call us, give us your feedback, because that's going to be crucial. And, you know, for those of you that are Paranexus members, we've got all the facilities, all the resources that we are putting to use on the Paranexus website in order to report, collect, and analyze this data.
Yeah.
And we're your colleagues. So, you know, let's all work together, and you know what? We can build this database.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's a good thing. And that's what we're trying to do. We're really trying to take this to a level way above the typical. Let's get fresh thinking in here. Let's get some new ideas. Let's try to find some common denominators, because I don't want to go to the great beyond, whatever that is, without having isolated something. We need to make some progress in this field that's largely been dormant for decades. We really haven't made that much headway. We need to make some headway, and I think we can, just if we approach it in a very professional and serious manner. There's got to be more answers. I refuse to believe that there's just not enough answers, you know, available. We just need to look in the right direction. There's always a solution to any problem. We just have to find it. And that's where I approach this whole thing from. It's where we all do. So let's keep it up. Keep doing that, making that approach. Now, again, we appreciate everybody listening to us. We, on this kind of a topic that we've talked about, and we kind of had on the back burner for when we needed it, and tonight we needed it. We had a little bit of a miscommunication with our guest, but we're going to try to get him on another time. Now, next week should be a great show. We've got Investigating Abductions and Alien Contact with Mary Zimmer. She is the Assistant State Director for MUFON for Florida. And she's,
yeah, that would be a good show.
Yeah.
She specializes in abductions.
Yeah,
so for our audience, who, you know, it's going to be consistent with some of the shows that we've had in the past. You know, one thing I'd just like to add too, Doug, is, you know, we encourage debate here too. So, you know, we don't expect members of our audience or our listeners to agree with everything we say. In fact, we welcome challenges. We welcome a counter viewpoint. So if you don't agree with us, and you can kind of stay away from apparitions with external genitalia or how soup cans are inserted into body orifices, we'd love to hear from you.
Yes, definitely.
Because it's only through honest debate and exchange of ideas that any kind of science or any kind of research can truly grow, expand, and encompass everybody. There's room at the table at Paranexus for everybody.
Yep. We're colleagues. We're not competitors.
Yes,
so,
indeed.
Anyway, as mentioned, we're going to keep our show to an hour tonight. We appreciate everybody who joined us in the chat room. We appreciate it if you're listening to the archive version of this program. We invite you to join us next week where we talk about further about abductions and alien contact. Mary Zimmer is also a hypnotist, so we'll hopefully be able to get some insight into some of the cases she's done. And we'll see what that brings us. We've got Brad Steiger coming up at the end of March, and we've got other guests that we're trying to line up. So if you know somebody who'd like to be on the show or you think you'd like to see on the show, let us know. And we'll contact him and talk to him. And if not,
or even if you feel you have something you want to contribute,
yeah,
you know, send us an email or give us a call. You know, we welcome your feedback, and, we know that there's a lot of folks in our audience that have unique perspectives and may be conducting research themselves in areas that our audience would find interesting. So,
yeah, and
you know, we're pretty easy to get along with.
And topic-wise, too, what do you want to see on here? I mean,
yeah,
we've done a lot on abductions and UFOs and things, but in the first few months, the majority of the shows have been focused on ghost research and all that. We just kind of go with what we've got at the moment. So if you've got a topic you'd like to see, let us know. And if you like the program, please rate it highly, and we'll hopefully make it up some of the ratings on Blog Talk Radio. But again, we appreciate everybody's time. We appreciate those who continue to listen to us week to week. We really do. We do it for you. We do it to grow. Thanks so much for your support. If you're not a member of Paranexus, we'd love to have you join us, and go to paranexus.org for that. If you'd like to take some courses, we've got those on paranexusacademy.org. I just added a week or two ago a free course, Introduction to Paranormal Research, which is kind of an introduction, really is what it is, and it will show you what the full CPI course is about. At least it'll give you a taste of it. Full course has got a lot more to it. And I've got the new leadership course out, how to start a group, how to run a group, how to advance communication skills, advance leadership skills. It's pretty comprehensive. And I'm also working on other courses, one on EVP specialist and some others. So those are coming in time. It just takes a lot to get those going, but they are coming. And if you want to teach a course, that option is available.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yeah, or two, you know, if you're in our listening audience, you know, you're in Florida area and you are having trouble with a haunting, or you think that something's going on, you know, feel free to call us. Doug and I are very accessible, although I will tell you I am not accessible at 3 o'clock in the morning. But
me either.
But we are always willing to discuss in a confidential manner if you feel that you've got something going on, and if we can help, we will.
And that includes abduction phenomena, too. If you feel like you,
yes,
might be an abductee and you want to explore that, call us. Call
UFO
me.
UFO sightings, Bigfoot, skunk, mm-hmm, ape, you name it, we're here for you.
Yeah. Well, thanks, everyone. We hope you have a great night. We hope to see you on the show next week. Until then, I bid you adieu. You take care, Grant.
Hey, good night, everybody. It's always nice to have you with us. Have a great weekend.
Good night.
In the night, in the shadows, in the sky, it's Paranexus Universe.